Good evening, everyone. It's just after 7 o'clock. It's Wednesday night, and this is the night for us to investigate the American Book of the Dead by E.J. Gold. This is a volume that's been around for 40 years, 35 years. What is it, Ivan? Something like that.
Well, they made the 30th anniversary edition.
And
that was 05.
30 years now. And this is a text that goes, that is, can be used as a separate standalone text, or it's a volume that can be used as part of the entire offering that E.J. Gold has written, which includes the human biological machine as a transformational apparatus, practical work on self, the hidden work, all of which we've delved into in this class over the years. This particular focus is on the American Book of the Dead, but we're not making the focus as practitioner readers. That is a whole other discipline where you learn to read for a voyager. A voyager being someone who has passed away. And the idea is that you give them guidance. It's based on a lot of the work that was done by in the Tibetan Book of the Dead, and that's great liberation through hearing in the bardos. And we're talking about the bardos and the in-between state. We're taking it in a slightly different way. We're taking the same material, and we want to transform it into a living document that says, what are there instructions for the voyager? Are these instructions from the voyager? And boy, did we get some really interesting stuff this week on that topic exactly. We got some. Harry, I don't think, is on yet. Susan, are you there? Is she on? Oh, how can you tell? Her name is Q on the thing. Oh, they have to type.
Yeah, roll call.
Well, go ahead and put it in there if you want. So the point is that there's a lot going on. I don't know if Susan's going to be coming, but there's a lot going on with Path World, with Harry. I had a fairly long talk with him today. And but anyway, so the whole point of it is this is life in action unfolding right now, okay? And these individuals are involved in things, and they're coming to new realizations. Susan, who shared with us over the last few weeks, has been stirring in what she's had to say. Wouldn't you say, Ivan?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
This is a book for her right now.
Well, it's a book for all of us. And Susan is acting as a guide for us because in her advanced stages where she's at, she knows that suddenly her body is not immortal. We all say that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We say, oh, yeah, I know that it's immortal. Even though we know that of the whatever 10 billion people that have lived on the planet, every single one except one has actually died.
Okay.
Or wasn't
the evidence is very strong.
It's very strong that my body is going to die, right?
Yeah. Dare I ask who's the one who got away?
who was it, Elijah or somebody that was just lifted into heaven?
Okay, well, right.
But I may be the second one, so I'm just I'm holding out a little hope there, but, well, maybe not. But what happens is that the machine is dictating all the time for survival on the planet. That's its job. Its job is to help us survive on this planet, and it does a heck of a good job. But then gradually as we start to live and we awaken a little bit, we realize, I'm not just a machine here. I'm not just a body. We begin to realize that I'm an essential self. And is Pathworld on?
Yes.
And someone like Pathworld, who's got many years of experience working on this stuff, she gets hit with something physically, and suddenly there's a lot of fear and uncertainty. And that's because at that moment, she realizes that the body is finite. There's a mortality to it. And at that point, the machine goes through something. When you realize your mortality, you start to realize that, in part, one of the things that happens, you start to realize, I am not the machine. You start to realize the eternality in which you live, that you are not bound only by that. And there's a chance at that point for something else to start coming out. Okay?
All right.
Now, so if we take these chambers and we read the chambers as guides for how to operate in the world today, that's the hope that I have with us here. People like Harry, Pathworld, Susan, and others who have not spoken up have that face, you know, it's just pressed into their face that that's the case. And they're given a reality about it. Harry today was telling me, he says, I know all this stuff, and this guy is a scholar, right? He does know all this stuff. But he says, until you work with it yourself and you're faced with the panic, it's just all theory. Harry's been going through a successful battle with melanoma. And yet during the last 6 months, he's had significant issues with panic. And this is an individual who is a very sophisticated counselor. He does, that's what he does. Is Hawk Lady on? She might not be on. But she and Susan and a few others have actually worked directly with Harry as a counselor.
Yeah.
Is that right, Jacoba?
Yes.
And is he pretty good?
I'm sorry?
Is Harry, was he good? You worked with him a little bit, right?
Yes. He is very good. Actually, I cried a couple of times.
He's very good, and she was moved by his work with her. And we know that what he is, and yet today when I'm speaking with, he says, it was like a whole new world dealing with how do I handle the panic that comes. Now, we've talked about this two or three times over the last few months, is what is the panic? How do we deal with the panic? And I want to say that we need to find small ways and means to do it. The other day I was at the store with Molly Midway, and she's buying a cup of coffee, and she's buying this cup of coffee, and she's real quick, she bought it, put the lid on, and she's real anxious to get out, and I says, no, wait, stop. She didn't put one of those little holders on it for the heat, you know, the little sleeve to protect her hand. And I says, well, why didn't you pause to do that? And it was because she was so anxious that she felt like she needed to get it. She was panicking at that moment. I said, well, that's just a weird little thing. That's just psychology. She can take care of that. No, that's a Bardo habit. So I said to her to consider that when that panic starts to come up, work with it as a reminding factor. It's a reminding factor to turn in. And what is the nature of panic? If we read these chambers, like in 17, we can see that the nature of it is that there's more energy slapping into the human biological machine than it can handle. I'd like people to recall right now moments of panic. They can be small things. Like when you dropped the container, or you tripped, or you knew you were going to be late. Does anybody have that experience? Have you ever had a panic?
Yes, I have.
You have?
Well, I've had some notable ones.
How about some not notable ones?
Not notable ones.
Correct. I'll give an example.
What are you thinking of?
So I get a call. My neighbor is named Denise, and I have a particular kind of water filter that she loves the water, so she comes over and gets water, right? So she calls me up, and she says, I need some water. I'm coming over. So immediately I could see it was slight. I'm not saying that this is like earth-shattering, but I noticed that the machine went into a form of panic. Very small. It was like, I've got to do this, I've got to do this. Make sure the door is just... This little process, this little insidious process started. So the first thing for me was what? Naming it.
Mm-hmm.
Recognizing it. Pointing to it. You can go ahead and read the log, Dan, because you have the phone there.
Well, Rocky says, thinking I've lost my wallet or credit card.
That's like a perfect example, because what happens when you panic in such a way is you depend on your wallet. I have three things, my key, my car, and my house. My wallet and my cell phone. And when I think I've lost one of those, I start to go into a panic because I depend on those for something. Right? Something. What does that depend on them for?
Stability, security.
Survival.
Survival.
At that moment, it's survival.
Right.
It's like, if I don't have my phone and I can't communicate and I can't find the key to my car or my wallet,
mm-hmm.
I can't survive. And you say, well, these are stupid little things. Why are you bringing this up? Because that's where you can begin to develop the Bardo habit of not reacting to the panic.
Mm-hmm.
Not reacting to the panic. You may panic. You may have fear. Panic is a reaction to that, and it's basically the machine saying, you know what, I can't handle this, I'm leaving. So it buffers.
Leaving where?
Exactly. It just get away from this excess of energy where I feel safe again.
Actually, there are reflexes. I was going to say, the kind of panics that I remember, once I was hiking alone in Arizona, and I got up above the tree line, and I was trying to follow a trail that was marked, and there were no more marked. I lost track of the markers, or there didn't seem to be any more markers and so on. And I just turned around. I mean, I panicked so badly that I just started running back downhill because it was like I didn't feel like I was going to be safe until I could get back on a marked trail or something. And I was it was like a reflex.
It was a reaction.
It was a body. It was like a survival, what is that called?
Survival mechanism.
No, the runner, something or run.
Oh, fight or flight.
Fight or flight, yeah. I went into total flight mode, and I realized after, when I started and got my breathing to slow down and I calmed down, I realized that, since I wasn't on the trail and I was alone, up at about 6,000 or 7,000 feet, I could have easily plunged off of a rock or done something.
Equally stupid.
Been stuck up there, yes. So the survival value of what I did was about zero. I fortunately didn't fall off a rock or into a crevasse or something.
So rather than noting that he was lost or off the path or whatever.
Yeah, I wasn't rational. I got totally irrational, that's for sure.
But at that moment, I don't know if Mark Roche is on Grocki, but that's the sort of thing he was mentioning a few weeks ago. What is the source of that? You can't necessarily deal with the source of it, but you can deal with your perception of it. Like, if you've been hit with this feeling, Ivan, and your practice had been, don't panic, then you would have had to absorb this excess energy. And then you absorb the energy. Quite frankly, what happens, you are then lifted up. And what is that energy? You were going to say something. Read it. Go ahead and read it into the log.
Question from the log.
Okay. Question. I get the point in these reactions or small panics. How about the panic you can feel when things are of much more weight and not necessarily a reaction but an actual fear? And then Nortana says, hypochondriac attacks is very panic.
Okay, so hypochondriac, so really big things. If you go into really big things as your starting mode, it's very difficult. Spinoza says in book 5 of the Ethics, I think it's in theorem number 2, he says that once you are in a confusion, he calls them infirmities, but when you're in the midst of it, there's nothing you can do.
Yeah, that's what I've experienced.
There's nothing you can do once you're there. But if you know that you're going to be in that, he says, you can take tools in there with you. So if you know you're going to panic, or if you're an individual that reacts, that has hypochondriac-type attacks, and you know that's going to come about, the most important thing is to recognize it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I would say so. You mean like to have the witness, like to be able
you become the
have
witness.
Some detachment on your own state.
You become the observer. You are not it. So the more you can know about that, then you're beginning to establish the habits of voyaging at that time. Simon, do you happen to have an example?
For instance, the fear a father could feel, and he is supporting the whole family, if he's going to be fired.
That would be a genuine fear.
Okay. So that, how would you deal with something like that? Well, okay, so that's a very complex question, very complex, because the panic, the anxiety, in a sense, may not occur in the moment, but it's like a building anxiety. So if it's something that you can't develop the strategy for, then what are some things that you could do in a case like that? You don't know what to do. What are some examples of things you could do? You know it's a panic. You are in struggle with it. What are they?
Rocky says you need support. Stardancer says being able to observe it can also help to shorten the episode of panic once you begin to detach.
That's primary. So the first thing is to point to it and recognize it. You point to it and you recognize it, and then it doesn't have infinite power over you at that point.
Okay, and then Simon says, I guess stay cool helps.
Whatever that means, stay cool.
Yeah, Rocky says counseling, and Sardancer says observe it, don't fight it. And
me is the most profound but difficult thing to do. That requires learning the techniques of the Voyager, because you are hit with the panic. I had an example 2 years ago when Sarah was still living with me. And I was living down on Richardson Street, 123 Richardson, and I had no money. I literally had run out of money. I had like $20. Mm-hmm. And at the time I was still eating a meat eater. And so I thought, I went out and I got some rice, green beans, and some ham or some darn thing, I can't remember, some form of a meat. And then I had like $7 left. I actually did not know where I was going to get the next amount of money. I didn't know.
Generous.
Then I realized I was healthy. I wasn't starving.
Mm-hmm.
I had food. My rent had been paid. What's the problem? What's the problem, right? So recognizing it, is it Star Dancer? Star Dancer, this is profound, because at that point you literally must become, allow yourself to be hit with it, and then you move with the force of that thing. Rocky started to touch on it, and one of the great tools that we have is ask for help. How do you actually ask for help?
Rocky also mentioned, bigger issues seem to be more prolonged, not so sharp. I had this when I realized I was paralyzed. And then later he says, you need support. So
this guy was actually paralyzed. If you read the log from last week, he said it wasn't that he was that much afraid of dying, but he was afraid of living in an impaired situation. This is a active, intelligent, energetic individual, and he was blown out. He was paralyzed. Gradually, in the arc of that experience, he did exactly what Star Dancer is telling us, first recognize. Boy, if you can do that, you've got a huge leg up. That's what I'm talking about in these little things, you know, these little small panics. It starts to build up the habit of recognizing, what is it like when I'm panicking? Okay? What is it like when you panic? There are specific physical attributes when you panic. Different people will have different attributes.
One thing about panic is you get tense. You're not in a relaxed state.
Keep going.
Well, it's a form of constriction of. It's like you're...
That's what the machine does.
Right, right.
Ooh,
yes.
This. I was in, recall being in some of the intense invocational chambers, and someone was invited in who was kind of new to it, and this individual, exactly what he did. His body went like this. Ooh, you know? And the only solution to that much energy is what?
Go limp.
Go limp.
Let it pass through.
You go limp, and that's what we're talking about, is this concept of dynamic surrender, where you actively, with your intelligence, you work on the idea of going limp. And Dan, you were getting close because you were talking about, but it's tense. The solution is to work with relaxation, but on a very deep level too. Because if you can allow yourself to be hit with that much energy, then you are in the point of cleansing radiation. And now here's the point that, now Rocky,
that a sort of a deeper use of the pond exercise?
I once shared the pond exercise with a sophisticated fourth way worker, and I talked about self-observation. And this is a medical doctor, and she said, oh, self-observation.
Mm-hmm.
As far as I can tell, and I am an experienced player, self-observation goes forever until way, 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 way.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a powerful tool for us because the act of self-observation allows some of this to come in and allows the cleansing radiation to hit us. The implication that Star Dancer is giving us, which is to observe it and just note, is she's in a sense saying, allow yourself to allow the cleansing radiation to come in. Okay? What Rocky went through was profound, and he had a lot of skill sets to bring to the event. And the energy that was hitting him was an energy of cleansing radiation. And he learned a lot about his identification with his physical envelope. And that's partly what Harry and I were talking about today, is at that moment, that's when you learn. If you panic, what occurs is you leave the space. You leave the invocation. Maybe in the same physical space,
mm-hmm.
but you leave the possibility of invocation and the possibility of the gift of, the real gift of cleansing radiations at that moment. So, for some reason, I'm recalling Nortiana's comment, and just observe, if that is what, in fact, if you're talking about yourself, observe how that works in you. There's a whole unfolding of how that panic will work in you, and there's specifics to it. The key is not to change it. That's the thing. You don't change it. You're not trying to block it. You're trying to watch it. And you watch it because it's a powerful amount of energy, and let yourself be penetrated by that energy. Okay? Yeah, go ahead.
Star Dancer says, during a prolonged episode of built-up fear that led to panic, I struggled with observing it. I could see it, but holding on to observe it was difficult, and I realized how attached I was and that I was dependent on an outcome I had no control over. All I could do was write it out.
These are not simple things. We're not talking about just because you have the idea of it, then it happens.
And then Gnostic Man says, the features of a panic attack are well defined in the DSM. The ability to observe that one is beginning to experience panic allows the possibility of sufficient inner detachment to avert the full blow. Pathworld said, well, she started off earlier saying, I lost it, but basically she said that, oh, there it is, cry, that's what I did first, that was her first comment. But then she said, I get fidgety and tense. All my meditation stuff went out the window when I panic.
So that's an exact comment. Listen to this, let's underline that. All my meditation stuff went out the window. So all her training left on the eve of that panic. There's two levels. One is that Star Dancer is talking about a profound fear event. Okay. That takes more practice, right?
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't it make sense?
Sure.
It just takes more practice. Is it easy? It's bloody hard.
So Vidara said distraction and deep breathing, and then clarified that a distraction is hopefully a healthy one, not a hurtful one, just turning her attention to something else.
Okay.
And then she says, for that method, I just randomly open the ABD or read Clear Light, as it has a calming, as I read, it has a calming effect because I realize there is no meaning to whatever scenario my mind came up with.
Yeah, but I'm also selling the idea of watching how you panic and what it is you panic over. The trick of the machine is to say, oh, just a little thing. That wasn't a big deal. It was no big deal.
Sure.
It's just a little thing. That's where the gold is. That's what we can dig. And the reason it's so valuable is because we can dig there. It's not a major panic. It's an interaction we can have with the machine, and we can work with it. And gradually, the essential self starts to take more and more of a central role. Doesn't mean that fears don't continue. They will continue. How you deal with those fears may start to change. And that's at the heart of the 17th chamber, where the Voyager in the 17th chamber, if we look at it very carefully, is being pounded by these deities, right? The four Dakinis, is that how it starts?
Four female gatekeepers.
These are tough frauds, okay? They make you pay attention on a level that... And so the answer, the simple thing to do is just panic and take rebirth right away, right? So what if your work is to do something different? Then you have to learn to be able to see those manifestations on you and allow them to flow through you. That's our dancer. That's some big stuff, but we can do that. We can work at that level. Just the fact that you brought it up, is significant. That means that there was, that you're not as attached to it. And I met with somebody this morning who is utterly attached to certain things about her panicking, and she's convinced that she must panic, because all these things are happening to her. So maybe there's a different method. This is when we develop the ways and means. This is developing my habits will carry me through. This is that. There's not another thing. Okay.
Well, Rocky says suicide hotline counselors are trained to help people talk their problems through. And Maya Satan says, induce a feigned panic state in normal life to keep you on the edge as a boost. I'm not sure about that, but
okay.
That's an interesting method there. I guess that is a way of handling it, actually. In the orbs, you'll often see a statement like, fear is a substance, pick it up and play with it as a cat would play with a ball of yarn. So in a way, if you are trying to handle panic that way, sort of like if you can make it happen, then you have some control over it.
You know, like Ivan was saying, he looks for these really big, you know, like I've had some giant events. We're preparing for the giant events. All right? We're preparing, but every day You go through a fear/panic event.
Mm-hmm.
You drop your keys, and there's something happens. Just marvel at the machine at that moment. Just marvel and go, look at that. It just panics when that happens. The little momentary panic, Stan is saying, the answer is that's how you start to build up a new habit. The machine is full of habits. And what we're trying to do is get something different going on.
Ozzy Matter says, I prefer the diagnosis of chronically bewildered to mental illness.
Yeah, chronically bewildered. But you'll notice panic happens in all kinds of ways. Even it happens in the mental centrum as well as in the emotional centrum. If there's something we don't understand, we tend to panic. So the idea is to sit with it and speak from your strength, which is, how does it feel from within? Because we're beginning to develop our inner sensitivity. What does your sensing mechanism tell you about where you're at?
Simon is asking, how do you frame these experiences but within the frame of the chambers in the book?
The chambers in the book are, they're an arc. They're an arc of experience that the Voyager is going through. The Voyager is going through a process. And there are different parts to the process. Right now, this particular one is called the 17th chamber. And in the 17th chamber, you can see that a great deal is pressed upon the Voyager. If you've read it, you can see that these forces are coming on the Voyager, and they're pretty profound. If you want, you can take that and try to look at it in life and say, do I have something similar to that going on? Like we did in some of the first chambers, where we talked about colors. You see colors manifesting. In this case, if you read that and you see characteristics like that, that might be a 17th chamber event. Right?
For a long time, I've had the sense that it's an important practice just to face one's fears, but I never thought of it in this context. And it really is a very fundamental practice to not run away and try to feel better, basically. And Simon Templar adds, because I think we won't have these opportunities when we face fear in the Bardos.
When we face fear in the Bardos, we have the opportunity to not panic.
The habits are necessary.
You have to develop the skill set.
And it's not time that you'll be able to change the habits. So that's what you're saying, David, about doing the work in small increments, because it's going to take a lot of repetition to develop that voyage. Change of a habit, an emotional habit or a mental habit or a moving centrum habit.
When I was very young, I was about six or seven, I grew up we're all around all my cousins, a bunch of male cousins, right? I was the youngest, and they went up to about 13 or so. So there was just tons of this young, budding male testosterone, and I was often the brunt of that. And so they had a little go-kart thing, and there was a maze that they push you like full speed through this maze.
Okay.
Right?
All
and the right. idea was that you had to learn, you come to the maze, you had to learn to turn at a certain point and then turn back, and then you could get through the maze. And so I'm sitting here watching all these guys do it, and they learned how to do it, right? And then he says, now you should do it. I didn't want to do it, of course, but they forced me to do it out of various technique. And so I'm sitting on the go-kart, and they start pushing me, and I just couldn't negotiate the turn.
Right.
At all.
Okay.
And I slammed into the wall, right? Because I didn't have the skill set developed to negotiate that. I was in the situation, they were pushing me at 200 or 300 miles an hour, I'm sure of it, and I didn't know what to do. That's how it is in the Bardos, is that we don't get to dictate the speed of things. It's coming at you. It's the locomotive is unleashed, and there's a lot of energy. But you can learn to go limp, but you've got to practice how to do that. So the day can open up if you allow it to open up and learn. And then you're a real, what do they call it? What does Don Juan call it? There's a stalker. You're stalking these fears that you have. You're stalking these different areas. And then you're testing yourself. Developing those tools. What else you got over there, Dan?
Rocky says, I don't mind the little things anymore. Lawrence of Arabia said, the trick is not minding the pain. And Auntie said, how funny, I thought the quote was from Gordon Liddy.
Really? Okay.
So, yeah, your pain tolerance will change if you start practicing in this manner. Like if you, let's say you have a class that starts at 6:30 a.m. and you're late. What do you do? Oh, I know, panic. That helps.
Run away, of course.
Or better yet, run away. Or you come and you recognize that your body is doing that and you just come up because it's an invocational space already. And you walk into it with the appropriate mannerisms, and you're late. That's just the facts, Jack.
Taking deep breaths is what I think of as the relaxed part.
That's a relaxing method to do it. And what we're doing here also is we're honoring the essential self, and we're honoring the fact that it has the ability to accept these cleansing radiations that are coming to us. We've put ourselves in a situation where the cleansing radiations are available. Allow them to come. Allow yourself to be burned by that a little bit. In the fifth element, it says, well, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. You had to be there.
I don't remember that one.
Huh? phone in also? Probably. So that's the import of chapter of 17. And we brought in a little bit in the email. I put in there the HBM chapter 20 and the header to that, where it's talking about the interplay between the two electrical bodies. The two electrical bodies of the machine and the essential self, and the dependent affinity that the essential self has. This is a way to begin breaking it and becoming a voyager, or becoming a true freed shaman at that point, as you're freed into the world of mystery. What else? Now, Susan's not here. I don't think made it. I'm going to read something from, she sent me a card. And, go ahead, Dan.
He mentions a friend can help you observe if you can't do it yourself.
Keep talking.
I mean, just the fact that there's been an emphasis here on working together with others, that is really important. But even here, I didn't think of it before, but yes. If you're panicking and you have someone else who can give you a different perspective and help you to observe what's happening, and remind you to observe. It's very helpful.
So that's, can we allow ourselves, can we open ourselves to others, quote unquote, helping us see where we're panicking? Think of that dynamic for a minute. You're in the midst of a panic and someone's telling you you're in panic. Rocky is exactly right, exactly what we should be doing, but it starts to take a different sophistication to be able to do that. Can we allow the other to observe something about us, or do we reject it?
And Rocky says, yes, bodhisattva work.
It is bodhisattva work, and it's working. If we want to work on the path in that manner, we'll put ourselves in a situation where others are able to respond to us, okay? So this is this card Susan wrote, and she said, I'm getting more and more okay with myself since the angel work. She particularly related to Anahel and to Gabriel.
Mm-hmm.
I feel I'm spending more time in the essential parts of myself and caring less about what others think of me. This is a big step, since one of my deep issues is judgment. But for her, it's just in judgment. Having a small role in the class has also brought me out. I feel that I am benefiting our class mates by reading the log. Just a small contribution with amazing room for working on myself. This is the idea of the of taking on a post. And then she continues. She's starting to work more with our work. So she was gonna, there were some things she wanted to say tonight, but I don't think she's feeling that well right now. But maybe we'll hear from her next week then. Okay, how are we doing? Okay. So go ahead and launch into the next set of chambers. Okay, 18 on. The poetry in 17 is very potent. It's good just to read it on your own and read it as in a poetic manner. And it is it's a way of lifting yourself in a different manner. Okay. We're okay? Okay, everybody. Is that it, Ivan? We set?
Yeah, I think so.
Pardon?
Yeah, that's...
This stuff from Susan. This is a remade individual.
That's a genuine testimonial.
It's a remade individual who put herself out, asked for help, and exposed herself, all of it, in front of a group of 10, 15, 20 people. Thank you, Susan. And we'll talk, I'm sure we'll talk this week. And thank everybody for coming tonight, and we'll look forward to seeing you next week at the same time. Okay?
Good night.
Good night.
Thank you, guys.